Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider with Pete Sampson from The Athletic. I'm Tim Priest with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. It's Thursday, December 7th, and a lot going on, as we have found out now as we go into December's here in recent years. Xavier Watts, it's amazing when you think about where Xavier Watts came from really game seven of the 2023 season. He won the Nagurski Award in the last five games of the year.
Yeah, and I think that does happen more than we know, but we just know his first 3.5 years compared to other people's first 3.5 years. And I tried to ask him the question without being disrespectful on the call. It's like, you were moved to a position for which you were in no way qualified. Rover. He was literally moved from scout team receiver to Rover 2 years ago. And now he's the nation's National Defensive Player of the Year for a 9-3 team. You know how hard it is to be the National Defensive Player of the Year and you're not going to a secondary tier bowl. You're going to the lowest you could go to.
It was the USC game. I mean,
and then back to back, people noticed, oh my God, he did it again against Pitt. Yeah.
Everybody in the nation knew about his performance against USC.
Yeah. I think that generally does it for people that win awards.
But then you've got prime time against Duke. He had a pick. NC State the week before had a pick. It wasn't just like he had one great game, but he did have one Maurice Crum UCLA style game that you couldn't stop talking about. It's just an incredible. I mean, you think about the move to linebacker. It just popped into my head. Like, one, I forgot that he even moved to linebacker.
Yeah, Pete texts me during this. He's like, oh my God, I did not know he moved. I forgot he moved.
I forgot he ever played Rover. I mean, that's like, remember John Turner when he moved from safety to linebacker in spring practice?
That's what
maybe it was vice versa. I don't know. Like, that's sort of where Xavier Watts' career was. And then, boom, he's National Defensive Player of the Year. It's just, and you just look at the guys who have won that award. I realized there wasn't like a Will Anderson in college this year. There wasn't a Manti Te'o in college this year. But Aaron Donald, Luke Kuechly, and you're just like, holy crap. What a season. And now he's on every All-American list, and we'll see if he can go back-to-back next year.
My point was that six games through the – as they went into the USC game, he had 29 tackles, two interceptions, and three passes broken up. He was playing good football.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't – I mean, it took that spectacular USC performance to for everybody to know who Xavier Watts was. And then from there, yes, following up. He did pick Riley Leonard on Riley Leonard's first pass of the game, right? And then he had a late pick against
Leonard. They drove right down and scored, didn't they?
Okay. All right, but it was.
Yeah, he had a big one.
Yeah, and he had a real late as the turnovers hit in the fourth quarter at NC State. He had, I think, that one that he dove forward for and grabbed. But it was meteoric and it was deserving. He was absolutely tremendous, especially the second half of the season.
There's a downside though, Tim. Next time someone on the message board says, I bet he'll be the next Xavier Watts, we can't just say, like, well, that's crazy, because this is crazy. So apparently crazy things happen.
Yeah, maybe if somebody starts out, you know, with modest numbers and then hits it hard from the middle of October on. Since our last podcast, Notre Dame received a commitment from Chris Mitchell, the wide receiver from Florida International. I think he's a good football player for Notre Dame. I love what he does in the open field. I look at him as like a number two type receiver. Did we talk about this?
We had a question Monday that was who would be the number one type thing.
Yeah. So Josh Kelly has visited. Josh Kelly, the wide receiver from Washington State, has visited. Bo Collins from Clemson. I think Notre Dame fans are expecting to get all three. I wouldn't quite get your hopes up for all three. But they're battling, and it's pretty amazing how quickly in this age of college football, you can turn around a negative with guys entering the portal and make it a positive through the transfer portal yourself.
Yes. I mean, when I was sort of, when the portal started, the intention was for Notre Dame to take seven guys. I think I even mentioned it on the podcast on Monday. Since then, I've been told the intention is to take 10 guys. So they're, you know, that requires a different strategy a little bit. 10 guys would imply the option of a third receiver, maybe a second defensive lineman. You know, but I think some of that depends on, you know, what does Riley Mills do? What does Jack Kaiser do? If they leave, then you have to adjust in the portal because you're not going to be able to just sign a 22-year-old linebacker or a 22-year-old defensive lineman unless it's from the portal. So it, yeah, they're being pretty aggressive about it, pretty proactive about it. I think by the time some people listen to this podcast, they may have one or two new portal commitments.
Which is better than sometimes when people listen to this podcast, they've had two or three portal defections every once in a while. So that's not as fun either. But, you know, I think if Mills or Kaiser were to leave, that heightens the need. If Kaiser comes back, it's like the only, and Mills, of course, you can roll with what you have. If one of those guys leaves, I mean, if Kaiser leaves, you cannot roll with what you have at linebacker because you don't have anybody above a redshirt freshman in grade. That's just insane. Kaiser could really blend it all together. And I'm probably, look, it's silly for me to say this. Jack Kaiser could hurt his ankle week one, and then all of a sudden you should have had a linebacker. But I get it otherwise if Kaiser comes back. And Pete, you make a good point. You're not finding Jack Kaiser's replacement like I have hinted you can find for some other positions in reserve in late April. If he were to leave or Mills were to leave, you would have to replace them here in December. You can find a guy's replacement that's your third string runner, your seventh wide receiver, your third.
You can find a Devin Ford in the spring. You can find Antonio Carter in the spring.
And they can help, you know, Devin Ford helped, but it's, you can't find Jack Kaiser.
Now we talk about Chris Mitchell, Jordan Clark, the nickelback from Arizona State also is coming to Notre Dame. And I Tim, I know that you talked to an Arizona State beat writer. I am scouring for quality film from Jordan Clark, and I'm just not running into it. And I look at his numbers with 50 tackles. I know that that your insider said that he had a quad injury during his senior season. I went back and looked at as much junior film as I could. And I just, like, when we talk about Tariq Bracey and we talk about Thomas Harper, I don't see that player. And that's asking a lot because those two guys were really, really good. Jordan Clark played mostly zone coverage.
In 23, though, right? According to someone on our insider on our board, that said in 22 it was
safety,
man.
Yeah. A lot of safety as a junior. But I just, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm looking for great things. I want to say positive things about a recruit, and I'm going to have to keep digging because I don't see a difference maker right now at nickelback with that addition. And I'm sure there's a good possibility that I'm missing good film, but I think I looked at about 150 to 200 snaps.
His it was interesting going through his stats versus Thomas Harper's last year's, and it was like, oh god, this is like, it's not a like for like replacement. So then I went back and looked at Thomas Harper's stats from Oklahoma State because that's more of a like for like situation. Thomas Harper improved a ton in his 1 year at Notre Dame. He was about I think an 83-84% tackler at Oklahoma State and a 95% tackler at Notre Dame. And, you know, Jordan Clark's going to have to make a similar improvement. He was about an 80% tackler at Arizona State, which wouldn't be good enough to play at Notre Dame at the level they need the defense to play at. But Thomas Harper made a big jump at Notre Dame. When you get to play, in theory, with Xavier Watts behind you and Ben Morrison next to you, that makes things a little bit different. And I think this will be particularly true with Riley Leonard too. Like, these are not like just box ready to go players. They need to come to Notre Dame and develop even as seniors. And that's something to just sort of keep in mind. I think when you look at stats, you look at tape, because Priester, you're right. Like, you just sort of see what Jordan Clark did at Arizona State. There's nothing that jumps off the tape. But if he can get to Notre Dame and work with a different defense coordinator and different personnel on defense, you get a chance to take your game a step forward.
I had Harper, I think Tim Ewell too, as a top 10 Notre Dame player this year.
Yes.
And I still think Bracey, I think he had a better year than Bracey. But I had Bracey as a top 6 Notre Dame player last year because Notre Dame had better individual players on their team this year. Right. I will say Bracey took a massive step forward too into his last 2 years. I think he took a huge step. He became famously good in his last year among Notre Dame fans. He was very good as a senior as well. People just didn't recognize it in 2021 because I think the lingering thoughts of Bracey getting toasted in his first couple years people would never get rid of it until all of a sudden they're like, oh, I have to take a look at this guy in a different light. But even if he's not, even if Clark is not as good as Harper or Bracey, and that's the most realistic thing, is that he will not be as good as those two in the last 2 years, realistically speaking. It's worth noting, we go back to the quarterback conversation, sell me on Riley Leonard, and Pete and Tim, you both said, well, we're not looking for a Heisman Trophy winner. We're looking for a guy to start over, in this case, Clarence Lewis. You're looking for someone to start over Clarence Lewis right now.
Well, that is the option. I mean, I just want to clarify, he's a good athlete. He's light on his feet. He's bouncy. He's a good change of direction. But, you know, I mean, he's played mainly in like this past year, mainly in zone coverage. Look, he played for the 107th scoring defense in the country, and now the standard is one of the best defenses in the country. So he's going to have to up his game significantly. If he becomes Tariq Bracey or Thomas Harper, I'm going to say he's one of the most improved players I've seen. But frankly, right now, I want to make this statement. I see more Houston Griffith than I do Thomas Harper.
All right, podcast is over. I will talk to you guys next Monday. We'll all get together again. I remember, though, this another thing. This is apples to oranges again. JJB could not have improved more from Ohio State to what he did at Notre Dame.
Yeah, but he was a natural passer. I agree.
Played strong side, and we didn't think he'd play strong side.
Yeah, he became a complete defensive end this year. I totally agree with that. But we knew he was a pass rusher coming in. I don't see one particular. I'm beating a dead horse here, and I don't want to do that. I want Jordan Clark to come in here and be a good nickelback for Notre Dame. I just have not. I'm not saying he won't. I'm saying I have not seen that.
Bet you he's better than Houston Griffith. How's that?
There you go. Yes. Further opt outs. There's talk of JD Bertrand not participating in this game. I don't know if that's official. To me, that's like the equivalent of Drew Tranquil saying he's not playing in a bowl game. I'm not, if that's what JD Bertrand chooses to do, the dude's given everything that he has for the University of Notre Dame and its football program. But if JD Bertrand opts out, every future Notre Dame player 100% is a candidate to opt out.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the same. I don't know what Bertrand will do at this point. Whether it's Hartman or Alt or Estime or Bertrand or Leofau, it's fine at this point. It's the Sun Bowl. It feels like a spring game more than a postseason game. And that's just the reality we're living in. I have 0.0% judgment of anybody who doesn't want to play in the game.
I'm not judging them negatively. I'm just saying that that's the last guy that I.
Yeah. Two things, Tim. If Notre Dame has to travel for the spring game to El Paso, I am going to cover for my TV, Pete and Jack. Yeah. Number two, if JD Bertrand sits out, I will go as far as to say he has a reason to sit out that has not the normal standard reason for sitting out of a game. He would not sit out of a game just to preserve.
Well,
he would not sit out of a game for a regular. There will be a reason behind JD Bertrand sitting out that is different than everybody else that sits out.
He's had concussions. Who wants to get a concussion playing in the Sun Bowl? I get that. I do. And I'm the last guy to judge him negatively on something like this. What hurts me, having been in the business as long as I have, is that the bowl games are, you know, especially now going to a 12-team playoff. The future of bowl games is not looking good at all. I don't know what it's going to look like moving forward.
So this isn't possible, I guess. I mean, obviously, just logically speaking, but someone on our board had a great idea to preserve the bowls and the money they bring in and all that. I don't think it would work perfectly, but it's certainly better than the alternative. Is that the bowl game is like your out of conference game that starts your season.
I know
you're trying to find a way to make that work, but wouldn't it be a much bigger draw and for teams to play, and there wouldn't be opt-outs if it's game number two?
Well, yeah, but what do you do in December? Like, what do you?
Nothing. They don't play anymore. That's what's going to happen anyway. You get to see it in game two. There's 12. How many playoff games? So you have 13 playoff games to watch. 11 playoff games to watch, sorry. In December, that's pretty good.
It's not 41 now, is it?
No, it is not. That's for sure. In both good and bad ways. But.
Yeah, yeah. Tim, you did a depth. You attempted to put together a depth chart for this game. I mean, it is so fluid since we last talked. Velling, the tight end for Oregon State, has opted out. That's a major weapon for them. Give us an idea what you looked at as you put together a Notre Dame depth chart, which is very fluid.
Yes, it is. Part of it was, I just want to make clear, like, this is not what Notre Dame's depth chart is going to look like when it comes out for the Sun Bowl. That one's going to look just like the old one, only they're going to replace guys that left with somebody else's name, and it will have nothing to do with the game that's being played. My depth chart is who should play and who their reasonable backups are here in these 2 weeks, because more people are going to be playing varsity. Notre Dame's going to lose probably unannounced with at least five more, six more possibly unannounced guys. It's not like they're new names, but they're all off the depth chart. So I tried to project what you could see from Notre Dame and the wide receivers. Since it's one game, it's kind of an ideal situation for what Pete calls the December spring game here. You get to see Jaden Greathouse probably play two positions. Faison will play one. Jaden Thomas could play all three positions. Salerno will play two positions. You'll get to see Colsey come back probably. Maybe KK Smith can be up there and play a position. That's actually kind of fun. The running back is obvious. You know, you're just going to go through the same four. It's four people without estimate. I just think the tough thing for Angeli and for everybody that wanted to see Angeli start, and the old theory of let's see what it looks like next year, even though he's not next year's starter, is Steve Angeli is surrounded by backups at every position.
Right. It's like you look at the starting lineup against Navy. You know how many players will be probably playing in the bowl game from those 11?
One, two?
Two.
Two, yeah.
Two. And Jaden Thomas would be one of them who's returning from injury. The other one is Pat Coogan. Like, that's a strange reality we're living in with college football, but so it goes. It's one of those things where I feel like the bowl season now is sort of like the postseason college all-star circuit, where like the practices are what matter and like the game itself does not. So that's like, no coach is ever going to turn down an extra 12, 14, 13, 14, 15 practices. But the game itself has sort of been, it's turned into a spring game.
I won't go so far as to say that, because they're renting a stadium and they're putting it on national TV. But I understand what you guys are saying. I also think this, I put this in Thursday Thoughts today, like a guy like Bertrand, you know, there's a trickle down effect of the other guys that are opting out. It's like, okay, I don't have Leofon next to me. Okay, I may not have JJB in front of me. I'm not going to have Cam Hart, you know, at a cornerback position. At a certain point, you can understand why a player is going to say that there's just no comfort zone for me playing in this football game.
I mean, I think that we can officially call time of death on, but he needs to play in the bowl game to get more NFL tape. Like, that's not a thing anymore. Cause like, what would the NFL, what tape would come from this game against Oregon State's backups with an interim head coach and a third string quarterback? There's nothing to show anymore. Like, what could be shown has already been shown. If you're a Notre Dame player, that happened against Ohio State and Clemson and USC and probably Duke and maybe Louisville. What happens against Oregon State is going to have no bearing on how pro scouts view you at all.
And I will say this, a matchup that we all want to look for in a game like this, beware Steve Angeli, because Notre Dame's going to have two new offensive tackles playing, and they're going against an Oregon State pass rush that's pretty darn good, 30-some sacks. So keep an eye on that. He could be under, Angeli could be under quite a bit of duress.
When you said, at what point do you not want to play because the people alongside you aren't there anymore? I mean, when do you think Sam Hartman made his decision? Just because the words were Sun Bowl, or because Blake Fisher and Joe Alt were no longer at practice?
I think it kind of went hand in hand, but I think the Sun Bowl was kind of like, okay, that's the...
The Mayo Bowl sounds worse to me. I think I know the history of the Sun Bowl better than some people, I guess. Who can forget the 3-0 Pittsburgh Oregon State game from 2008?
That was a beaut. I had the under. Last thing to cover here in segment one, Real quickly, Tyler Buchner is leaving Alabama to come to maybe Notre Dame, but probably Notre Dame, but he's going to play lacrosse. And I would just like to say, Tyler Buchner, tremendous decision. Now that I found out how much he made at Alabama, I guess that wasn't that bad of a decision either.
No. Hey, can I play message board fun right now? Tyler Buchner will be there for the game, though, right? To win a national championship, possibly, for two games? He's not leaving. He's going to hang out with Alabama, right? Or did he enter the portal for... He's staying to play with Alabama for the bowl game, or for the two playoff games. Let's say Milroe gets hurt and Ty Simpson gets hurt or something along those lines, and then Tyler Buchner walks off a champion and moves on to Notre Dame and becomes a champion in two sports in one semester.
Why did he announce he was going to play? But
it's the lacrosse portal, not the football portal, right? He could play football.
Nick Saban is going to kind of see a distinction between those two?
I think he is still playing. I actually think he's still playing. I'll look it up so we don't have bad radio while we go to break.
He's not playing if
no, he's not.
Milroe continues to play.
Playing's a strong term, but it's like the fish on the menu. Yeah. He's participating.
We're coming back. Segment two, burning up the boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from our old friend Siggles. Rank these full four bowl game scenarios in order of how pumped you are to witness them. The first one he offers is the new offensive line composition is a possible preview to 24. The second is young linebackers getting a ton of action. The third would be a full game of Faison at punt returner, which I haven't even thought about, but now I'm excited. And the fourth is Steve Angeli starting at quarterback.
I mean, I'm pumped for none of these things. I'm interested in Angeli starting at quarterback. But the other three things don't move the needle at all. And I realize this bowl game may be kind of tough to pick out. I mean, that's why it's a spring game, right? Like you're picking out little matchups here or there that might intrigue you. And there will be some maybe that pop up. But other than Angeli, I'm not sure. I don't know what, you know, Drake Bowen at Mike linebacker, but only if Jack Kaiser also plays. Would be kind of interesting. But
yeah, that would be interesting.
Pumped is not how I would describe my approach to these matchups.
Because of what I said about Oregon State's pass rush, I'm very, very interested to see what Tosh Baker and Emil Wagner do at tackle. I'm very interested in seeing Angeli play a game at quarterback, but we also know that there's a very high chance that they're bringing somebody else in to be the starting quarterback next year. I agree with you, Pete. Drake Bowen's a guy that, you know, that's a guy that we have an opportunity to probably see extensively, maybe Jalen Snead a little bit more extensively. And turning the page at punt returner with Jordan Faison, absolutely. I'm not sure how many actual real opportunities he'll have to return them, but let's see how he catches them and maybe we can see him in action a little bit.
I'm going to say that Jordan Faison should not be allowed to fair catch in this game and just try to score every time he gets the ball. But the new offensive line, it can be interesting because that's the only one that, Faison, but the new offensive line composition greatly affects next season. I know they're going to try to get an offensive tackle in the portal because they absolutely need one. But you're still looking at four starters for next season playing no matter what, maybe five contributors playing. See the young linebackers getting a ton of time. I think you're going to go nickel as much as you can to keep Thomas Harper on the field with Jack Kaiser and ideally JD Bertrand, ideally for our subscribers, Drake Bowen. And Angeli starting at quarterback is the entire story of the game, but all that lets you know is how much do you want him to play? Well, Riley Leonard, here's a good point. It was on our board. This is not my point. Riley Leonard, the way he plays football, probably won't start healthy 12 games next season. The way he attacks football, the way he runs, the way he...
I mean, he stayed healthy the year before. I understand the point, but I mean, he stayed healthy the year before. I do want to point out that, you know, that the two quarterbacks, Uiagalelei, of course, opted out, as did Aiden Childs. And I think I said on Monday that Ben Gulbranson threw one pass this year, and which is true, one pass, one completion, 6 yards. But he did start the last 8 games last year, and they were 7-1 in the 8 games that he started. He had a 9-5 touchdown interception ratio.
MVP
percentage of
Las Vegas Bowl MVP.
Las Vegas Bowl MVP.
Yeah. So in terms of experience, Notre Dame's facing a quarterback that's going to be much more experienced than Steve Angeli.
You know who else went 7-1 before we read this next one? It was Matt LaVecchio. And he was also involved loosely with Oregon State. So there we go. ND Base 2001. Is there anything to the Riley Leonard to Ohio State smoke? And if so, are you aware of any backup plans for Notre Dame?
Pete, is there
no like, and no
smoke?
Like, I mean, Ohio State evaluated Riley Leonard and they did not like him. Yeah.
This is Notre Dame's to win. Today's Thursday. We should know soon. But I want to throw in the next question with this, Tim, from Irish Gambler, because this is something I thought about. How likely is it for a quarterback to transfer out before the Sun Bowl if the Irish pick up someone like Riley Leonard in December? I don't think that would happen, but it did occur to me that if he announces here this week, still Angeli's got an opportunity to start a football game.
He told them I'm bringing in a graduate transfer.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. I don't think Angeli's not going to pass up an opportunity to start a game.
That would shock me. Like, unless it's, hey, I need to go find my next spot now. I mean, that was sort of Drew Pine's approach last year. It was like, well, if you're bringing in somebody, that means that I'm not starting, which means I need to go get started on finding my next spot. It seems unlikely. It's something you got to be aware of, I think, if you're Notre Dame, but seems unlikely.
I feel Steve Angeli would have entered the portal last week.
Well, right. And Angeli wants to put some tape out there. If he does want to transfer, he's going to want to play in this game to show a little bit of what he can do. I don't know. It's all such new territory that, you know, we're projecting about things that we've never had to consider or project before.
This was my joke about Buckner playing the message board. What if Steve Angeli transfers and Kenny Minchie gets hurt and Dylan DeVizan has to play? Can CJ Carr play? Well, that's how I'm getting Tyler Buckner in the playoff game. Just everything could happen. You never know.
Got it. CJ Carr can't play in the bowl game.
He cannot play in the bowl game. It's all the reasons are there. Nor can he receive bowl game swag, which I thought is kind of ironic in the NIL era because they could just give him money.
Yes, and they do. I have two questions here from Elm City Domer. Assuming Audric Estime is out, a limited wide receiver group, an offensive line rolling in backups, and a second string quarterback, do you expect ball control running attack as the plan, or is there a chance to have some fun and let it rip? And then he also asked about Maris Leofau being out. How do you see the linebackers lining up in the Sun Bowl?
I'll take the second part first, because I think it's Rover. Instead of Rover, I mean, it's Nickel with Harper. You put your best players out there. So Harper, Bertrand, and Kaiser, or if Bertrand opts out, Harper, Owen, and Kaiser. So the real question is, where does Snead play? I would find a place for Snead to play if he can do it, because I think you should keep enticing players to stay on your roster until the portal ends.
Yeah, I would agree with the starting lineup, and I would agree with the push to get Snead, just force the action a little bit there, which they sort of kind of did last year in the bowl game.
Right.
But like, that's just true. You want to keep Jalen Snead sort of engaged and like, hey, here's where things are going once our roster turns over a little bit. The first question from Elm City Domer, I don't think the have fun and let it rip is kind of in the playbook with, you know, what they've lost at wide receiver. I'm not sure who you're letting it rip with. There are some, you know, Flanagan and Reardon, Greathouse, Faison. There's some material there. I would think you're still probably better off trying to get the ball to Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price on a handoff.
Yeah, I mean, we may talk about spring scrimmages and stuff like that. It's still a game, and the offensive coordinator needs to have a good game. The head coach desperately wants to win his 10th game. I don't think this is how coaches view these things, generally speaking.
We know they don't view it as a spring game, the coaches, because there's some issues going on with the people not playing. But I want to go back to Priester's point. Let's say the wide receivers have a phenomenal 2.5 weeks and there's a lot of faith in Thomas, Greathouse, and Faison, which, by the way, if there were no transfers out, are still their three best wide receivers when healthy. Thomas, yes. Greathouse, and Faison. Bring them all back. They're still the three best. The tackles protecting against a pass rush is the problem with trying to rely on a let it rip passing game with your backup quarterback and your backup tackles.
Yeah, agreed. Question from GR Irish Fan 22. Is there any chance we will see split time at quarterback between Angeli and Minchie in the bowl game?
That's probably it's like a spring game bridge too far. I don't think that you would do that.
Let's say in the old days, there's no graduate transfer quarterback coming in. Then I could see it happening. If Minchie would have earned it, let's say these are their two plus CJ Carr for next year. There is no such thing as bringing in a guy to start for you. You might want to see a little bit of it, of Minchie have a package in the bowl game. But now, what's the point of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't. That's not a bad idea. I wouldn't split reps, because then you're taking away from both quarterbacks, I think, to a large degree. Maybe a package. I think we're overthinking this. Your quarterback's not playing. You go to the number two guy. This is the guy that everybody wanted to see. Now we want to see Minchie too. I think that's asking a little bit too much in preparation for a game in which everything is so disjointed to begin with.
Next question from Life Unleashed LLC, new contributor here to Irish Illustrated Insider, I think. Who would be perceived as the number one receiver for Notre Dame if Chris Mitchell, Bo Collins, and Josh Kelly all joined the wide receiver room?
I was kind of pressed on this on the message board, and I said something about Bo Collins, and then, well, you said Bo Collins is number one, and then Josh Kelly. Like, I don't know if any one of these – I mean, Josh Kelly is probably the closest to a true number one, and I really like his game. I like his underneath game. I don't see a ton of separation with DBs from him. Now, he has great hands. He makes some of the most sensational catches you're going to see, but I don't see him get a ton of separation. So I think that kind of makes you hard to be a number one. I don't know if any one of these is really a true number one. I like Chris Mitchell's game. Bo Collins has dealt with injuries. Somebody compared him to Deion Colsey. I don't compare a guy with 91 receptions to a guy with 16 receptions.
Bo Collins has 11 touchdowns in the last 3 years, and I think Notre Dame's wide receivers had 11 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, so he's better than he has had injuries. Yeah. There are some consistency issues with him, but that trio thrown together with the numbers that are still on the roster, it'd be a pretty damn good receiving core.
I think during the season, we talked about how Notre Dame didn't have a number one receiver. They had a bunch of number twos. I think in reality, they had a bunch of number threes. I don't think they had a number two. But I think if you had Mitchell, Kelly, and Collins, I would revisit the maybe Notre Dame doesn't have a true number one. They have a lot of like really good number two receivers. Throw Jaden Thomas in there as well. Like, you could do some damage with those four guys on top of Greathouse and Faison. Like, that would finally, you would look at Notre Dame's receiver room and be like, hey, they have some options here to like kind of mix and match how they want to play. So I don't know if any of them are a true legit number one, but that would be a nice group.
This is irrelevant to real football, but it's fun for this. I'm going to put you guys on the spot. Who is Notre Dame's number one wide receiver next year? Does he come out of those three transfers if they all show up? They all show up as part of the deal. Or is it Thomas, Faison, or Greathouse? Is it the current guys or the other guys? One pick. One guy becomes it from the group. You just say which group, Notre Dame or transfers?
Notre Dame. I think it will be Jaden Thomas.
I would say transfers. Josh Kelly's a volume. Chris Mitchell's a volume guy.
I was thinking Greathouse healthy could be.
You know, look, if that's the issue, they've got, as Pete described it, I agree with that. I'm not sure that it's a true number one. I think Kelly, to a large degree, is that, but you would have a bunch of quality receivers. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Our next question looks ahead. Denver Maximus, with Mike Elko and now Colin Klein as offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, how daunting will this opener be for the Irish?
I think they'll probably lose.
More daunting than it used to be, I can tell you that much.
Oh, yeah. When I saw that Colin Klein was Mike Elko's offensive coordinator, that was like, is this real life? Is this happening? It's like a script has been written, and this is the latest plot twist for Marcus Freeman and Jared Parker, because, that's just going to be a lot of pressure on Notre Dame's offensive coordinator to have a great game plan in week one against Mike Elko.
It is, and Mike Elko, there's no doubt in my mind, Mike Elko would have loved to have been the head coach of Notre Dame, and now that's not going to...
Do you think Mike Elko has a good scouting report, understanding of what Riley Leonard's strengths and weaknesses are?
Exactly. That's why I don't like this. Plus, it's at A&M. As I sit here right now, Notre Dame's an underdog. There's any doubt about it.
Yeah. And it's a game like way in advance. But if Notre Dame lost to Texas A&M, that's fine. It just needs to be 24-21, with 3 offensive touchdowns.
I was gonna say, it might need to be 34-31 if you're looking for something to make the masses happier.
The offense has to have a good day or good night or whenever that game will be played, but it adds just a little extra.
I would advise people to not shake too much in their boots over Texas A&M and Notre Dame in the opener, but Mike Elko and Colin Klein adds quite a bit. But really, Mike Elko adds the most. If it was coach that hired Colin Klein, we wouldn't care what was going on right now. The Mike Elko part is the thing.
And the talent that is on their roster, the way they've been recruiting.
They've had plenty of attrition, though, haven't they?
They've had a lot.
I'm sure. But now, Elko can jump back into the portal. And look, everybody has already declared next year's schedule a disaster. What if Notre Dame's 0-1? And then you have those remaining 11 games. You've got to win them all. In order to get any respect from your fan base, you virtually have to win all of them. They're going to be an underdog at Texas A&M next year. I don't know how there's any other way to... and that's not going to be an easy place to play with, a really, really competent head coach.
You can win as underdogs, just saying,
Yeah. Basketball question for you, Tim. Is that where we are? Yeah.
Yep.
From IndyFan08. Basketball question. Have you guys been more encouraged by the defensive effort and rebounding of the men's basketball team, or more discouraged by the lack of scoring on offense?
I like the question, but both things were just completely playing out as forecasted by really anyone listening to Coach Shrewsbury or that saw the roster. I'm not surprised they can't score, and there was no way this team would not have high defensive effort and rebounding the way they were built. And when you look at some of the bodies they have out there, I think the most encouraging thing is you look out there and you feel like there's some athletes that can get in the way of ACC players and stop them from scoring inside. There were not last year. And I don't mean ACC, unless Lipscomb went to the ACC, of any player getting in there and scoring, because they couldn't stop anyone inside last year.
Lipscomb tore them apart.
Oh, it was incredible inside.
Yeah. No, one of the things I like about Shrewsbury is that he, despite just trying to piece together a roster, he has length. He has has some athleticism. And that's why I continue to bemoan in my head not having Lubin and Starling, because they'd be a pretty damn good team if you had those two guys thrown into this. But I am way more encouraged by the defensive effort than the rebounding. I'm pretty much echoing you, Tim, than I am discouraged with the offense, because we knew the offense was going to be trouble. Yeah. And they are legitimately playing defense and rebounding. They have length. It matters to them. It's a different team and program than it was. But they can't score. That's going to be a problem all year.
Next, from Martin Evenflow, Emil Wagner has looked light in the weight department since arriving on campus. Do you think he can handle a 12-game season at right tackle at 288, or does he need another 30 pounds? That's a lot of pounds.
So does he need to be 288 or 318?
He will be, what do you think, 302? 307, he'll be live?
I think he'll probably be around 300. Look, he's got to be who he is His entire life, he's had trouble putting on weight. When we saw him in August, I guess late July and then August, and he was 288, you could see he was a lot bigger. That was really, really encouraging that he got up to 288. If he can get around 300, to me, that's a good working weight for him. Absolutely.
Are you saying when we saw him in August, guys, when he was reported as the starting guard somewhere else? Not from Irish Illustrated or The Athletic. Now, I might add
you're,
out,
but, you're saying an inside joke, and we're going to get in trouble if we don't explain your inside joke.
Well, I mean, you know, you should just read other people's practice reports, and you'll realize Tyler Buchner had a great day, and Emil Wagner starting a guard. Because you make up things sometimes, apparently.
I think, to get back to Emil Wagner, like, he's too good of an athlete not to be a solid college offensive lineman. Like, and I realize I don't think he's ever going to be 318. But I don't think he needs to be 318. I mean, it's like he's kind of one of your prototypical small forward, power forwards who happen to be an offensive tackle. He's got great feet. You know, he's got a lot to learn fundamentally, and that's fine. But I'm not overly concerned about Emil Wagner, whether he gets to 298 or 308 or 318. I think naturally the weight will come on, and he should be a good college player.
Yeah, I just think he'll be better served around 300 than 288. But this is what I don't. Why is Baker not a right tackle and Wagner a left tackle?
I don't know for a fact that that's what it is. I think maybe Baker was closer to the field, Tim, so you would in no way ever replace Joe Alt for any reason in 2023. And not that you're looking to replace Blake Fisher with Tosh Baker, but it's kind of like, I'm trying to think, I blanked on the name, when you had Mike McGlinchey at left tackle and you had the duo at right tackle. You had Eichenberg wasn't going to play at the time at all. So you, to keep him with varsity, you put him behind McGlinchey, but in reality, he'd have been battling more with Hainsey and Kramer than in any way battling with McGlinchey. I think sometimes you just kind of fill in the chart so they have two deep roles. I'm with you. I think Baker would be a right tackle.
It's certainly a question I have for Joe Rudolph.
Yeah.
When we get to that point, if we get to that point, what do you think about that, Pete?
I'm with you on that. I look at Wagner's athleticism, and look, Baker was a basketball player in high school as well. I just don't think that his foot speed is nearly what Emil Wagner's is.
No, it's not. He is mammoth, man. He is large. He is huge. No, and that's why, his foot speed. Yeah, I know he's a basketball player too, but it can't be anywhere near what Wagner's is. So I'm just curious about that. We'll see what happens as they move forward. But boy, it's going to be, they're going to be on an island a little bit against Oregon State, unless Oregon State has some more opt-outs. They got a kid named Andrew Chatfield Jr. who has, I think he leads them in sacks with 9. He has 9 tackles for loss. They are all sacks. So
any eligibility remaining?
Probably. he absolutely is a guy that is a pass rush specialist, and those two tackles will probably have to deal with him.
Hey, does anybody know, speaking of eligibility remaining, if number 9 from Tennessee State could visit? Because he had a heck of a day against Notre Dame's right tackle.
Yeah, he was good. He was really good. We have a question from Lost 6582. Will Marcus Freeman be up for an extension after the 2024 season? Will he get it if Notre Dame does not make the playoffs?
O'Malley and I had the same facial reaction on that one. Like,
well, I did briefly forget about the 12-team playoff thing. I totally forgot. Well, that's kind of harsh, right? If you come in number 5 or 6, but that's the playoffs. Yeah. No,
it's I do think making the playoff is the new minimum. Did you have a successful season? Yes or no? No qualification, one way or the other, for Notre Dame, and that's fine. Like, that's, I think that's a reasonable expectation in a way that making the playoff in the 4-team era was not. Full credit for them for making it twice in the last, 10 years. I think that's great. But I don't know what Notre Dame will do in that instance. I really don't. If he makes it, he's extended. If he doesn't, I don't know. Are we under the impression it's a 5-year deal or a 6-year deal?
It was six originally.
Okay, then maybe you can wait another year because there's still 3 years remaining. But we're we're coming to a point in that contract where you got to start thinking about how you see beyond it.
Yeah. And coaches, you know, having 5 years of contract remaining is important, because when you recruit somebody, especially linemen, you know, I'm going to be here for your 5 years, so to speak. Now, I mean, had he beaten Clemson, he may have already gotten that extension.
Right. Which is still a weird way for me to look at things, because Clemson was our injured team. Notre Dame was favored on the road against an injured team. I'm not saying he wouldn't deserve an extension. I'm just saying that's what gets you an extension. I mean, if they make the playoffs next year, I think he will be extended after the season.
I agree. Yeah. And that would probably mean that they improve from 8-4 to 9-3 to 10-2 during the regular season. But
yeah, 9-3 next year would not get, I mean, 9-3 this year didn't get him in. But 9-3 next year cannot get them in.
No,
it's not even close.
Three losses. Not saying that there won't be any three loss teams in the playoffs, but from Notre Dame's perspective,
I mean, they're a pretty talented three loss team right now to be ranked. Where did they settle in at
16th?
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty highly thought of too, in terms of like, they didn't drop like a rock until they had to. Sometimes Notre Dame loses and there's nine spots drop, you know, but that didn't happen until the Clemson loss. They were not out of sight, out of mind. They still had a chance there.
Well, that's the difference between losing to, you know, Ohio State, a really good addition of Louisville, and Clemson being Clemson. Or you lose to Marshall and Stanford, you're going to plummet.
Valid. Yeah. Final question, kind of weird one, from Blood of Zeus. Notre Dame has never beaten an OSU team, Ohio State, Oregon State, or Oklahoma State in a bowl game. Does Steve Angeli finally lead them to the promised land? And I would like a definition of promised land if the first answer comes out here, guys.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Those bowl games all stunk in their own way, but the Insight Bowl in 2004 had to be the worst, right? I had a laptop that was on the fritz, and it wasn't a very competitive football game.
The media hotel was still the Camelback Inn, though, so I don't know. I don't know what the problem was.
Very true.
It was a bowl sponsored by an internet provider that did not provide internet for the game. So that was what the Insight Bowl was. But I don't know. I'd probably turn this question around, like, based on Notre Dame's bowl history with Oregon State, which Oregon State player will rip Notre Dame and then be a future head coach at Oregon State? Because Jonathan Smith from the Fiesta Bowl did it, and then Trent Bray was the defensive MVP of that Insight Bowl and now is the head coach. So Notre Dame will play Oregon State in a future bowl game, and their head coach is probably their starting Mike linebacker.
Notre Dame's odds in this game against the OSU team are probably better than they've been in any of them. I guess
they're a lot better than the first one. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. They might have been a slight favorite against Oklahoma State. Is that right? But
yeah, they were like a 1-point favorite.
That one got away from it. I don't know anything about promised land or anything like that. I think Notre Dame can win this game. It'll be interesting to see where the line ends up, because so many opt-outs. I mean, so many really quality players for Oregon State, but Notre Dame just as many, certainly.
Have you worked in the, I've requested the pat down celebration from the 2001 Fiesta Bowl with Hushmanzada and Chad Johnson, because that is still the funniest touchdown dance I have ever seen in my entire life.
Why don't you go ahead and explain that for everybody?
When Hushmanzada scored a touchdown, I don't know what it made it. It was probably 34-9 at that point, as he put his hands over his head and Chad Johnson came in and patted him down. Now that's funny. That is a touchdown dance. Probably can't do that one anymore, but it was funny.
We're gonna be back on Monday. That is the 10th of December. I'm not sure exactly. We'll probably know more about Notre Dame's roster moving forward just about every time we come back for another podcast. Not so much for this game coming up, but I mean beyond this season and moving forward.
Tim, it got quiet, didn't it? The portal this week. The official portal week got very quiet after last week.
it'll get worked up again sometime shortly after that bowl game. So, I mean, it's all new territory for us. You don't know. Notre Dame is certainly going to be bringing in more candidates to transfer into Notre Dame. And so we're going to stay busy with this. We'll stay busy with trying to handicap a bowl game that's lost a lot of its luster. I would love to have seen these two teams at full strength go against each other, because I think it would have been a great match. But until next week, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, you've been listening to Irish Illustrated Insider.